action item number 10. Report and possible discussion on wastewater plant video by John Hoffman.
This is a really neat thing that we're going to walk you guys through in anticipation of our tour. And what it is, TCEQ and GBRA partnered and put together this. It's a generic wastewater operation overview. And so what we're going to do is walk you through this. Now, what you have in Sugar Land will be different than this, than these series of slides in some places, and I'm going to brief you on that as we go through this. But the goal is to try to give y'all an overview about of what you're about to see, and it's a critical part of our treatment side of our business. Let me preface my comments by saying this. At a high level, what we do in wastewater treatment is very, very simple. We use what nature does. We manipulate it through an artificial environment and make it do it better. We take the natural processes that break down wastes that are out there in nature, and we control them so that we can break down those wastes a little bit faster. And the process all begins at your home. When you flush something down the commode or you run something through the drain, the bacteria that are in and every amount of waste and organic material that's out there begins to work. And those flows begin to travel towards a wastewater treatment facility somewhere. Most of the areas we try to use gravity to flow wastewater. But in flat spots like what you have down in Sugar Land, we have to use some type of mechanical lift called a lift station to be able to pressure stuff to be able to get it to the plant. So this tour really begins with this little piece of equipment right here. So let's go ahead and go on that. This is a bar screen. When raw sewage, which we call influent, comes into the system, it's run through this bar screen. And the main goal of that is to be able to take all of the big stuff, the foreign things that would otherwise stop up our process, and we want to screen that out. And there's a large rake that comes across the front of that and periodically pulls we call it rags, but it's all kinds of matter stuff. You can't believe what comes through there. Clothing, towels, children's toys, more than a few children's toys, plus through here. All of that stuff gets raked out. We put that in a dumpster and we call that the landfill. All right, let's go to the next part of the process. Now, the grit chamber is a part of the process where we then work on the next size of materials. This is where we try to get the sand and the gravel and that kind of stuff out of the implement. And it's a relatively simple concept. We use physics. Now, that water's coming in at a pretty good velocity, and in this chamber we slow the water down, and what happens when the water slows down is the heavier stuff drops out of it. And that grit chamber is really good about taking that out. Now, this slide has the materials out of the bottom of the grit chamber going to a digester. At the South Plant at Sugar Land, that's not what we do with it. We take that stuff out of the grit chamber and we put it in a dumpster and we haul it off to the landfill. We have a digester at Sugar Land, it's just not at this part of the process. All right, let's go to the next slide. Okay. At the Sugar Land South Plant, we don't have a primary clarifiers. We have our clarifiers later on in the treatment process, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about what a clarifier is and what a clarifier does here. And we understand that it's going to happen later on. And of course, Carolyn Johnson's over here smiling at me. She ought to be up here giving this instead of me. Basically, most clarifiers are these big cylindrical tanks. In the middle of the tank, you've got a post that an arm is suspended from. And that arm has an arm that comes out off of it. And it basically, everything that floats to the top, all the greases, all of the foreign objects and things like that that come to the top, get picked up by that wand or rake that comes across the top of the surface of the clarifier. Wastewater is introduced into the digester from this center post. That wastewater has biological material, bacteria, protozoas, things like that that are actually working to eat the waste and to reduce the amount of waste that's in there. There is two ways for that water to, for the sludge to come into the process. One is, the sludge comes in through the bottom part of this deal here. It's also taken out through the bottom part. We extract the sludge from the bottom part of the clarifier, and it's used to either go to sludge processing, which we're going to talk about a little bit more detail later on, or it goes back to the front part of the process to seed the treatment. So let's go to the next.
Where does it come from?
Oh, it comes from the bottom. It comes from this center post.
No, but
it's actually fed into the process through the bottom part of the center post.
From where?
From the grit chamber.
Oh, okay. You still show it.
Actually, in Sugar Land, it doesn't come from the grit chamber. On these slides, it comes from the grit chamber. In Sugar Land South Plain, it will come to you from the aeration basins.
Well, I thought you said it comes up through the bottom for the
it does.
So it comes in two places?
No, sir.
Oh, this other place, that's
right.
Not the feed over there. Okay.
Yeah. For simplicity's sake, to have it set up. All right, are we on the second primary clarifier slide? All right. Now, on the outside edge of this thing, there's a weir that runs around the circumference of the outside of this. And it's set up high enough to where once the water has settled the sludge down to the bottom, and we've had the gunk skimmed off the top, the clean water goes over the edge of that weir down to the side of the clarifier and moves through the remainder of the process. So that's where the clean water goes, is over the edge of that weir on the outside edge of the clarifier. Now, again, at the South Plant Sugar Land, is not this step of the process. It's a little bit farther along, and I'll point that out to you in a second. But now you at least understand how a clarifier works and why do we call it the clarifier. The clarified water is what actually comes over the weir. Now let's go to the aeration basins. Next slide. We come out of the grit chamber into the aeration basins at Sugar Land. Aeration basin is where we introduced air into the system. Air and more bugs. This is the artificial environment that we create that is the workhorse of the treatment process. In the aeration basins, there are several different ways to introduce air. What you see here is air bubbles coming up from the bottom. Those diffusers or air sprinklers, if you will, that exist in the bottom of an aeration basin is just one way you can do this. At Sugar Land, we use mechanical aerators. We've got actual machinery that churns the water to introduce air into the process. Why is air important? Well, these bacteria and these bugs that exist that eat the waste are energized and fed by air. The more air you introduce into the system, the more efficient eaters of waste they become. Hmm. So what we want to try to do in an aeration basin is to create an ideal environment for those bugs to be all that they can be and to eat as much of the waste as they can possibly eat. And in this aeration basin, as you can imagine, there is a continual life-death cycle that's going on. Live bugs are suspended in this structure through the air bubbles, and they're eating waste and reproducing. As they get to the end of their life cycle and begin to die, they start to fall down towards the bottom of the plant. They begin to drift down towards the bottom of the plant. And we're doing this constantly. We're feeding new wastewater into the aeration basin, and we're feeding sludge and more bugs into the system, and we're feeding air into the system, and we're churning it up to try to keep those guys munching on the waste as much as they possibly can to try to clear that waste up. So the aeration basin is really one of the most important stages of our wastewater treatment process. Go to the next one. One of the things that we do, that our operators do in this part of the process, is they spend a lot of time monitoring the bugs. I mean, our operators really have to be concerned about the health and the numbers of those bugs. And air is a big part of that life cycle. They use air to change how the populations of the bugs vary inside this environment. As you can imagine, too, electricity is a big cost driver for us in these operations because it takes electricity to create the air that we feed into this system. And what you want to do is try to find the optimum level to where you're running just enough of your machinery to produce just enough air to get those bugs to where they're at their happy place. If you run your air too much, you're going to have your costs out of whack. You're going to cost too much money to introduce too much air. If you don't run your aeration enough and get too chintzy with your electricity dollars, you're going to affect your bugs and you won't get the treatment that you need to have. So it's this is a big part of the process here. Now let's go to the next slide. Okay, let's go to the clarifiers. What they're calling their secondary clarifiers is where we really have our clarifiers at the South Plant Thurster Grind. And I've already kind of briefed you on what those clarifiers do. I think I want to talk about sludge processing here for a second. I told you that during the course of a process, there's that life cycle where there's bugs living, eating, reproducing, and then dying, and then beginning to drop out. They drop out in the aeration basins. They really begin to drop out once we get into this clarifier, because the waste, as it's being treated, comes out of the aeration basins into our clarifiers at the Sugar Land South Plant. So when they settle out in that clarifier, those bugs are then either taken out to reseed the aeration basin in the treatment process, or they go to a special piece of machinery we call a sludge press. We have the ability to press sludge out of several different places within our plant. The sludge press is where we take what's left of the treatment process and we mash all the water out of it and bind it up with some chemicals to allow it to make a cake that we can stick in a dumpster and haul to the landfill. In some places, they compost this. We actually have an operation up at Temple Belton where we compost our sludge. Let's see here. Now, what we do at the South Plant in Sugar Land is we actually go through a couple of different steps to try to reduce the amount of moisture that we have in our sludge. We have a small clarifier that we use to thicken that sludge up. And we also have a digester just in front of that that we use to be able to further reduce the amount of volume. And you can think about it like this. If the aeration basin is really the workhorse of the treatment for the waste, the digester is the workhorse for trying to reduce the amount of sludge that our wastewater treatment plant produces as much as possible. Because remember, that's a pretty big cost too. We've got all that stuff in the landfill. Landfills have gotten to the point now where they don't like having to take sludge because there's other more valuable things that they can use for that landfill space. So our costs for hauling this stuff to the landfill go up every year. So we like, in this plant environment, to try to reduce that sludge as much as possible. So we run that sludge when we extract it out from the bottom of the clarifier and we send it through to the digester, we try to further reduce that volume of sludge, and then we go and settle it out there in the thickening.
And all this is continuous flow?
Continuous flow. As long as we've got people living out there in those subdivisions, it's a continuous flow.
It's a giant intestine, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, households that want
to support? You know, I don't know how many households they have on there. We probably asked them. Yeah, yeah. Was here earlier, but I don't know how they had their thing broken. We have two wastewater facilities that we operate within Sugar Land, and I believe there's another one that they have a partnership with the MUD that they're running. The South Plant that y'all will see today is the newest of the operations that we have today. We operated the North Plant for them for years. So the South Plant we've only been operating for, this is our, I guess we're going on our sixth or seventh year to operate the South Plant of Sugar Land. It's really a neat little plant. It makes really good water. It cleans water up really, really well. That's one of the reasons why we went back there. Okay, let's go to the next slide. When the water is clean, it still has some biological critters that are living in it. It's got some bacteria and some things, some human pathogens and some things that if we don't kill them, it could make people sick. So we run the cleaned up, mostly cleaned up water too. A separate basin where we bring it into contact with, for lack of a better term, bleach. It's a chlorine product. There's two different ways to do this. You can either use liquid chlorine or you can use gaseous chlorine. For years, most of us used gaseous chlorine because it's cheap. Problem with gaseous chlorine is if it gets loose, it can make people really sick or kill them. And when you have a residential subdivision that literally surrounds you like you have in this area here, it's a big problem. Not to mention the worker safety issues and concerns that begin to come into play when you've got a gaseous product like that. So for worker safety issues, for neighborhood safety issues and that kind of stuff, a lot of people, oh, and by the way, when you have all the worker safety issues and the neighborhood concerns, now you have regulatory oversight that begins to come into play. So a lot of people have moved away from gaseous chlorine to a liquid chlorine product to get out of the regulatory business as much and to make it a safer place for their neighbors and for their workers. So we dose this water with chlorine to kill those bugs, to kill those bacteria that are left within the process. It has a minimum amount of time that has to be in contact with the chlorine. Your permits usually spell that out. And when you're done, you have reduced the risk of that water making anybody sick after it's being discharged. So after we've introduced the chlorine, after we've killed the bugs, we go to the next slide. We have to remove the chlorine from the water. You may be scratching your head at this point saying, well, that doesn't seem like a very smart thing to do. You just spent all this money and added all this chemical, and now you're going to take it out. We've got to, because if we inject that water into a creek or a river with the amount of chlorine that we've had in it, will kill everything that's around where our discharge is. So we have to remove the chlorine so it's safe for the critters and the bugs and the flora and the fauna that live out there where we discharge this water. So we add a product here, a liquid product here, to take the chlorine out before we discharge it into a river. Now go to your next slide. Now, because of the concerns with chlorine overall, the wastewater industry has been moving towards the use of ultraviolet light as a means of killing those pathogens that exist in the treated water. The upside of this is you get out of the chemical handling business altogether with respect to that part of your treatment process. The downside of it is it's expensive and it's got high O&M costs, because remember, electrical costs are a big driver for this stuff because you're generating all this air. Now you're running these UV light bulbs, and it takes a lot of electricity to run these UV light bulbs. So it's great from a reduction of chemical process, and it does a great job when it works, but it's higher capital cost and somewhat higher O&M cost, and they have to be weighed against the other concerns about the cheap liquid product. You see on this, we actually have our Brushy Creek facility that we have in Round Rock is on UV. And then we have some in Georgetown that are on UV too, right?
Yeah, we have two facilities in Georgetown.
Temple Belton is about to do an expansion, a big expansion there. They'll be looking at the efficacy of doing UV disinfection as a part of their process. Can we go to the next slide? The interesting thing is, after we're done with all of this, whether it's UV, whether it's bleach, whatever it is that we use, we're done with the treatment process as far as the water is concerned. We're able to go out and put that in the water course. Now, we have our standards for that discharge dictated to us by the state, and it's not a uniform standard. The standard really depends on what part of the state you are in and what type of water body you're discharging into. And they try to make the permit terms reflect the type of water that you discharge into. But by and large, when you go across the state, the water that's being discharged, in a lot of cases, is cleaner than the water that it's going into. It's cleaner than the water it could be for reuse projects. Yeah. That's where you would take it out of this part of the process.
That essentially is your gray water. You just wouldn't dump
gray water is actually a term of art for domestic use water.
Okay.
It's a different critter. What we would call this is reuse water.
Gotcha.
Reuse water. Next slide, please. We're almost done. Not a part of any of our processes, but in some parts of the country, you see what they call a secondary treatment or tertiary treatment. There's three different ways that they can do this. There is a chemical tertiary treatment, which obviously speaks for itself. Usually you add some type of chemical to try to take any solids that are left in the water and to try to settle them out. Usually some type of flocculant or something that you would put in there. It would affix itself to the organic matter and drops to the bottom of the tank and can come out. Next, it would be filtration treatment. Literally, it's alternating layers of anthracite or sand and gravel, some type of filter medium. And it would the foreign matter out of it. And then last, go to the next one. Last is you can discharge through a wetland, a constructed wetland, and let the plants do the water cleaning up for you. We haven't had a lot of this in Texas up until this point. We'll see it going forward because the regulations are driving us towards the removal of nutrients out of our wastewater discharges. Standard wastewater treatment practices don't remove all of the nutrients. Once nutrient standards really come into play, you'll see more and more of these tertiary treatment systems that'll come into play. And wetlands are usually a double benefit for the environment, so you see a lot of interest in doing constructed wetlands because then you get a great photo op of people out there with the habitat for the cranes.
John, is that why today we see more vegetation growing in the bottom of some rivers than we saw 20, 30 years ago?
There's a number of factors that increase the amount of nutrients that are going into the water now over what it was before. There is more wasted water discharge going into those, yes, but there's also a lot of urban runoff that's coming into play. Well, honestly,
of course, lines.
Licensed applicators of herbicides and pesticides and chemicals that are out there in large acreages, like if you're on a golf course or a farm,
right.
It's much stricter than what it is if you're John Q. Public and you can go out there to Home Depot and buy whatever you want and lay it on the stick is what you want. When that stuff washes off, it goes directly in the water course.
Then,
But depending upon what's going on with the water, with the water itself, the type of water that it goes into, generally speaking, when you add nutrients to the water, you will see more organic material grow in that water and you'll see more of the color. That's all the slides, I think. We've already talked about effluent discharge and state geotechnical terms for that. So I stand here before you and ready to ask your question with fear and trepidation.
Where do we stand on purchasing that extra land at Temple Belt? Have we looked at some that land that
we are finished with the environmental site assessment phase two? They have not finalized the report yet. We've seen a draft report. They found detects of some of the materials, but they found nothing hot. They didn't find anything above any action levels or anything like that.
So, I mean, is that part of our due diligence,
yes,
before we make an offer, or is that?
There's no offer. The price is set. The price was set between the two parties.
And who's conducting who's conducting the phase two? I mean, are we paying for a phase two on that?
Yes, we paid for a phase two. I don't remember the name of the engineering company.
Okay, no, that's what I meant. It's us doing it.
Good.
Thank you.
Hopefully I won't talk in terms of
this point we're done. So we call a recess to the meeting to be reconvened on the bus for the bus tour at about 20 till. So probably about 20, 25 minutes.
Did I give you that?